Welcome to Sipping Success, the ultimate podcast for all things beverage and alcohol. We're here to quench your thirst for insights, analysis, and a splash of entertainment. Get ready to dive into the world of beverages with us. From the latest trends to in-depth discussions with industry leaders, we've got it all covered. Whether you're a connoisseur or a curious sipper, Sipping Success is your go-to guide. Join us as we uncork knowledge, raise a glass to innovation, and help you elevate your brand to new heights. So grab your favorite drink, sit back, and let's sip success together. Tune in to Sipping Success and drink in the wisdom. Cheers. This podcast is brought to you by Mushroom Media, the go-to digital media agency for all things marketing. From crafting captivating campaigns to decoding social media sorcery, Mushroom Media is here to empower your brand and help you scale. So whether you're brewing, distilling, or concocting the next big thing, Mushroom Media has a solution for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sipping Success Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. And we're very happy to have this week Levent Tisa-Salu. He is the founder, CEO of Hazelicious. And if you're not familiar, Hazelicious is on a mission to break the hazelnut out of its shell and show the world how delicious and versatile it can be. A natural choice for non-dairy alternatives, wholesome nut butters and snacks, and much, much more. Levent, welcome. We're very happy to have you on this episode, and we're excited to hear more about Hazelicious. And could you tell, could you share with our audience like your history and then ultimately what led to the founding of Hazelicious?
Absolutely. And first of all, thanks for having me, Casey, and it's a pleasure to be on the Sipping Success podcast. So my story is both a lot like a lot of food and beverage founders, and also a lot unlike a lot of food and beverage founders. And what I mean by that is this industry seems to, a lot of people seem to gravitate to this industry to follow their passions and dreams and come from other industries. And that's my background as well. My background has been finance for the first 14 years of my career. I graduated from undergraduate in 2008, and up until 2022, I was in the finance industry, specifically in the private credit and private equity industry. And you know, I was starting to kind of get antsy in my seat, and starting to say, hey, I want to do something that I'm a little bit more passionate about. You know, I'm still passionate about finance and the financial markets, but that's more on from a hobby perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, around 2022, you're now talking 2 years into the pandemic. Remote work is still what's going on at most workplaces. You know, the whole human interaction component has kind of dissipated, and it's just a tougher work environment. And I was saying, you know, I've had this idea in the back of my head. Is this the time to do it? Yeah. A huge catalyst for that is the passing of my grandparents. They both passed from COVID. Yeah. Sad story. The silver lining there is they both got sick at the same time and passed almost simultaneously. So neither had to, fortunately, witness the struggles of the other. But an interesting fact is that they owned a small hazelnut farm in Northeast Turkey. Hmm. Northeast Turkey is where 75% of the world's hazelnuts are grown. So if you get a jar of Nutella, which is the predominant, Ferrero is the predominant sourcer and utilizer of hazelnuts. That product is, the hazelnut portion of that product is almost certainly Turkish hazelnuts.
Okay. And
the industry there is kind of interesting. It's not farming the way Americans kind of probably think about farming, which is one, you know, large swaths of flat land, trees organized in rows, machinery running up and down the rows of trees, either planting or harvesting. Hazelnut farming is very close to what people might think of when they think of tea farming or rice farming. So the hazelnut trees are actually scattered on these mountainsides, reaching up to 6,000 feet in elevation. And they're a crop, or hazelnut trees are a crop that loves rocky, wet soil. So these mountainsides that are facing the Black Sea, looking north towards Russia, facing the Black Sea, they trap all this moisture that comes off the Black Sea. So think kind of the fog that rolls into San Francisco, or the wet weather that kind of comes into Portland or Seattle for our friends in the Pacific Northwest. Same concept. It's just constantly, constantly raining throughout the year. And you've got these trees with these deep roots scattered on these mountainsides, actually preventing the mountainsides from having mudslides and all of that from all this rain because of their deep roots. And they thrive in this type of climate. So the hazelnut trees have been growing there since about 3000 BC. And farming there has been small family farming since then. Everybody has a small house. And then attached to that small house, maybe above it or beneath it, is a small plot of land with hazelnut trees that people actually have to hand pick, because there's no machinery that can run up and down these 45 degree angles, essentially, in kind of think muddy, rocky soil. The people who pick the hazelnuts, they put on these rain boots that go up to their, you know, their knees, think like kind of fly fishing. And that's how they're walking up and down these, I don't want to call them rows because they're not organized, but these like levels of hazelnut trees on these mountainsides. So I took quite a bit of a segue there, but.
Wow, that's fascinating. I'm sure there's more to it, and gosh, it would make for an interesting documentary. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when my grandparents passed, I said, look, I've been wanting to do something with the hazelnuts for a while. I've been wanting to kind of, quote unquote, elevate them to where almonds are, because they're tastier, they're better for the environment, they have more uses and potential applications than almonds. And the only thing that's happening to these hazelnuts is they're being milled into the 12% base of Nutella, covered in 50% sugar and all these other additives. And that's all people know about when they think hazelnuts. So that had been the mission. And then, you know, combine COVID, my grandparents passing, and, you know, getting a little bit antsy in my finance seat, I put all those kind of things together to say, now's the time.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for sharing. That's truly a lot of fascinating components that you were very descriptive on. And so let's maybe kind of focus on that. So you chose kind of that era of COVID to start this among all the factors that were going on in your life. So I guess what sort of within that time period, or maybe leading up to now, what sort of changes have you had to adapt to as you started this venture?
Sure. So one of the changes, obviously, that we've had to navigate throughout the whole time was supply chain costs and availability. When we first started, both the cost of certain ingredients and the transportation of certain ingredients was just untenable for a small business. So we had to plan around, postpone certain things, wait, model out different potential costs. And, you know, those are the main changes in the environment that we've seen. Obviously, we've also seen inflation and food prices go up. In a way, that's helped us as a premium product, because hazelnut prices have for the most part stayed pretty stable while other prices have come up. So that's been very beneficial to us. But one change, and this goes back before COVID, one change that has happened in the alt milk industry, and this applies to our hazelnut milk products, is when, you know, the most prominent name in the alt milk space, Oatly, got started, and they got started by attacking the food service industry. And they literally were going around dropping free boxes of Oatly off at coffee shops and saying, you got to try this for your non-dairy consumers whose only choices are, you know, either soy or almond, which is very thin and watery. You have to try this. This is the next big thing. The ecosystem of food, plant-based milk and food services really changed. We're way past, I want to call it, peak plant-based milk. If you come out with, you go to a coffee shop and you try to introduce a new plant-based milk, you're just going to get people rolling their eyes and saying, okay, what are you guys going to milk next? You know, you've done the almond, you've done the cashew, you've done the pea protein, you've done this, you've done that. So one thing we've had to navigate is identifying that consumer demand for innovation is at this moment more on the grocery, on the retail side than it is on the food service side. So using the Oatly model to launch our product there was not applicable, as applicable or as successful as we wanted, while we saw the grocery model and the retail model actually perform better than we thought it was going to perform for our launch.
Okay, interesting. And then, you know, within that, within your founding, are there any particular obstacles or challenges you've overcome that you're proud of?
We were in the midst of a big obstacle very recently, and we've overcome that. Mostly, we still have we're still trying to we had to take a step back, and we're trying to make that two steps forward as we speak. To be more detailed, our co-manufacturer for our milk decided to essentially focus on other products, and we couldn't come to an agreement on how to manufacture our products going forward. So we were due to launch into a major national natural food chain this past winter. And without being able to produce that, we had to delay that launch. That sent us scrambling for new co-manufacturing space for our product, which we were luckily able to find. And we're happier than ever with our new co-manufacturer. However, we are trying to court our that national retailer back into our list of retail outlets.
Okay, interesting. And then, can you the one thing we haven't touched on is, can you walk us through, you know, all the products that you have available within the Hazelicious brand?
Absolutely. So right now we have two SKUs of milk available. These are available e-com via Amazon, Walmart, and then available in small natural food stores and smaller chains. This is our lightly sweetened and our unsweetened hazelnut milk. Our hazelnut milk is a very clean label hazelnut milk, because the hazelnuts are high in fat, much higher in fat than say almonds. We're able to make a rich and creamy plant-based milk that has the texture of dairy milk, froths like dairy, but doesn't have to have a bunch of added ingredients. And the taste, the hazelnut taste, complements coffee, which is, you know, hazelnut syrup is the second most requested pump at coffee shops. And our product does very well with earthy flavors like cereals, overnight oats, all of that. So those two products are out, and we're continuing to expand nationwide, both food service and grocers. You know, we have a big expansion coming in the Pacific Northwest in terms of retail. We have that East Coast large national natural chain coming out. So quickly growing there. And then we're just a couple of weeks away from the launch of our hazelnut butters, which are going to be, in my opinion, our star products. It's really going to be anchor of our brand. Nobody has done a real hazelnut butter the way we're doing a real hazelnut butter. People have done hazelnut spreads, which are essentially your Nutellas, which a ton of sugar or chocolate, very kind of runny texture. Nobody's done a peanut butter equivalent or a almond butter equivalent in the texture and the consistency that Americans are used to spreading on their toast, on their pancakes, making a what we hope will the future will be an HBNJ instead of a PBNJ as your staple kind of lunch sandwich. So our line of butters is, you know, it's just a couple of weeks away from launching.
And just out of curiosity, obviously your product seems very unique to the United States. Are there any other like global similar competitors you might have?
There are some global hazelnut milk brands that use a much lower quality hazelnut than we do. So there's a difference in taste, but there are one or two hazelnut milk brands available in Europe.
Okay.
When it comes to hazelnut butter, there's nothing, we've had to put a ton of R&D into our hazelnut butter. It's not as simple as taking a bunch of hazelnuts, milling them and putting them in a jar. There's a lot of work that has gone into stabilizing that hazelnut butter, getting the consistency right, and getting the roast levels right, and getting the amount of skin that's on the hazelnuts being removed properly. So no one's done, there's not a single product out there that will come close to our hazelnut butter once it launches.
Okay, interesting. And you know, back to maybe your past career, you know, bringing that into the forefront. So you being really astute at finance, can you speak to any metrics that you use to measure success with Hazelicious?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the metrics I would have used back in my day in finance are applicable to larger corporations. You know, call it the $10 million in, you know, revenue and up type of corporations. We're not there. I really function on three metrics. The three things I look at is, obviously, I'm looking to grow revenue, right? Grow revenue. We're a tiny, tiny company. And success for us means, from a qualitative perspective, success for us means growth of revenue. But I also forward thinking in the way, and I tend to run this company differently than maybe what some people in kind of tech world would be used to, which is that I don't take on revenue if I don't meet my gross margin target. I'm not, you know, we've had, even in the food and beverage space, we've seen examples of companies, alt milk companies even, come out into the market, raise money, and continue to sell product at a loss just to gain market share, and then have to raise prices once the capital dries up. And then, with the hope and assumption that the consumer is still going to be there, or the distributor, or the food service or grocer is going to still be there at the new price. My metric is keep gross margin in that range and grow revenue while maintaining that gross margin.
Very well put, boy. I don't think a lot of founders really vocalize that. So that's pretty interesting. And then to that end right there, let's maybe kind of dive into kind of a little bit more personal aspect. What advice would you give somebody looking to succeed in your industry? Or maybe think of it, what advice would you give to your younger self?
I would say, it's a bit cliche, but if you have a passion, and if you have an idea, and it's a well thought through idea, and you've done your research, and you see the market potential, and it's never going to be guaranteed or close to guaranteed, but if you have that passion, that drive, that idea, do it as early as possible, because the later you do it, the harder it becomes.
Yeah. Okay.
The more responsibilities you have in life, the more difficult it becomes to take risk. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to fail. It's okay to take massive leaps of faith, but it's easier to do it when you're younger.
Yeah. Sage words there. And we've been talking with Levent Tisasalu. He is the founder, CEO of Hazelicious. And so we're down to really kind of our last question here, but this being more in case anyone in the audience wants to make contact with you, whether they maybe have a question, they might want to partner on something, or they frankly just want to find out more about Hazelicious, how would people go about interacting with you?
You can come to our website. There's a form there that you can fill out to contact us. You can email us at hey@hazelicious.com. We're a small enough company that when you email that, I will get a copy and see it and almost certainly read it and almost certainly be the one responding back to you.
Great. And so for those not familiar, it's hazelicious.com. Hazelicious.com. You can jump on and check out the products, and you can, for any questions, you can fill out that contact form. Well, I want to thank you, Levent, for joining us here. Very fascinating on how you've grown the business and the steps you've taken here. Thanks for sharing all the details along the way. And thank you all for joining us for another episode of Sipping Success. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. And again, you've been listening to Levent Tisa-Salu, the founder of Hazelicious, and you can find them on hazelicious.com. Thank you, everybody.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode of Sipping Success, brought to you by Mushroom Media. We hope our discussions have left you thirsting for more knowledge in the world of beverages and alcohol. Stay connected with us on social media for updates. And remember, the journey to success is best enjoyed one sip at a time. Keep exploring trends, connecting with leaders, and scaling your brand. Until our glasses meet again, cheers to your continued success, and may your cups always runneth over with inspiration. We'll catch you in the next episode.